For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Have you heard you can listen to your favorite news podcasts ad-free? Good news. With Amazon Music, you have access to the largest catalog of ad-free top podcasts included with your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or visit amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free and catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
I gotta tell you, I love this story about Marjorie Taylor Greene. Evidently calling up some woman in her 70s, a lifelong Republican in her 70s, and, you know, admonishing her for spreading vicious lies. Went on this whole rant about, it's been brought to my attention that you're spreading some lies about me. That are being spread by one of the leaders of Antifa. Someone that you wouldn't want to be involved with. Basically telling this woman in her 70s, you better check yourself. And you go, wait a second, what are you going to do, Marjorie? You going to go over there and smack her around a bit? And then I thought about it. I'm like, yeah, probably. Yeah, I mean, these people are that kind of, that level of crazy. And they're going to possibly take control in November. Let the fun begin. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on just how crazy things could get and where the top stories of the week have taken us, I've asked our good friend Max Burns to come talk with us. Max is a Democratic strategist, columnist over at the Daily Beast, and the newest on-camera correspondent with the Young Turks Network. Max, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me.
Let's start with that. Congrats on the Young Turks gig. Good job for you.
Thank you very much. I always will take any opportunity to tell more stories about how Republicans are undermining democracy. It seems important, you know?
It does. Now, I'm looking at Trainwreck Green here, and you better check yourself, old woman. Why am I not surprised by this?
Well, this is just where the Republican Party is. I mean, there's a saying in politics that if only every voter could meet my candidate, he'd win in a landslide. The opposite is true for Marjorie Taylor Greene. The more voters meet her, the more they go home thinking, I'm never going to vote for this person. How do I defeat this person? And it's such a double standard to me, I think, that Madison Cawthorn is really getting hammered now and called an embarrassment by the party. But everything Marjorie Taylor Greene is doing gets the thumbs up from Kevin McCarthy. It's all great.
Yeah, I mean, it's just crazy. And you know, look, she's not even the worst one. I mean, Boebert was, what was she going on about someone sending baby formula to China? I mean, just pulling stuff out of some orifice. Kind of crazy.
I think she was accusing Congressman Eric Swalwell of sending our formula to Chinese babies. You know, your classic Lauren Boebert.
I mean, it's just plain kind of crazy, the stuff that goes on with these folks. And then it takes us over to Madison Cawthorn, where, wow, you want to talk about cratering. You want to talk about somebody who's literally, you know, tanking. Wow.
Yeah, I wish Democrats were this effective at attacking Republicans as Republicans are at attacking their own. There's an article out now in Politico about Madison Cawthorn, essentially detailing his collapse. And if the kid wasn't a Nazi, I would feel bad. It appears that he does have some real problems going on. There are several Republicans who spoke on the record in that piece that Madison Cawthorn needs help, maybe needs an intervention. And it left me feeling like I understood Madison Cawthorn better, and also understood more than ever why he should be nowhere near a seat in Congress.
No, I said the same thing. I mean, there's somebody, look, I don't know what his orientation is, but clearly he's struggling with some identity issues, doing the cross-dressing thing, rubbing, shoving whatever in someone's face. There's a lot of questionable behavior going on there.
Yeah, I mean, bring a gun on a plane once, shame on you. Bring a gun on a plane twice, shame on me. It really is the detail, the number of things that have happened to him just in the past few months. Another driving infraction that he's in court for, a marriage that dissolved. He's increasingly sort of erratic and lashing out even within his own party. It does make you think that the party is almost in a way doing him a favor by trying to push him out next week. And the scary thing is he might still win.
Yeah, that's the thing that gets me. I'm looking at the polls. He's still ahead. So what do they do once he wins? I mean, I've seen some stories they're going to try and, ostracize him a bit. But how do you do it that even more now that he's let it out of the bag? Because this all comes out, if you remember, all because he let it out of the bag about the coke and the orgies.
Yeah, and it's the same with Matt Gaetz. I mean, if Republicans take back the House, they're in sort of a moral pickle, not that they're worried about the morals of it. If you say don't seat Madison Cawthorn because the entire party has condemned him, his entire state delegation has condemned him, how do you justify not seating Cawthorn, but seating Marjorie Taylor Greene or seating Jim Jordan? This is a real question. There's so much rot that has gone untouched in the Republican Party that I'm just curious why Madison Cawthorn was the straw that broke the camel's back here.
I'm telling you, it was the coke and the orgies. It's like Fight Club. You can't talk about coke and orgy club. You just can't talk about it. It doesn't exist.
And people should stop. It is a terrible visual. You could envision any of the Republican caucus at a cocaine orgy. It you won't sleep.
Yeah, Chuck Grassley. You just can't imagine Chuck Grassley at the coke and orgy party. Can't get that out of you?
I can now, thank you.
You listen to the Rick Smith Show here with Max Burns. Max is a Democratic strategist, columnist over at the Daily Beast, and the newest on-camera correspondent with the Young Turks. You want to check out his work at the Daily Beast. We'll get links out on social media on how the work that he does there. I wanted to get your thoughts on this week. The president laid into Republicans for not being helpful. You're looking at the Rick Scott plan, kind of putting some blame at their feet, and then using the MAGA and ultra MAGA labels, which you knew immediately that the right was going to take for their own. And I loved the Rick Wilson frame of this is another example of Democrats playing chess and Republicans eating the pieces, which I thought was brilliant because it's true. This is what they do. Thoughts?
I think from a messaging standpoint, this is a mess to me. This idea of ultra MAGA that comes at a time when there's sort of a civil war in the MAGA movement right now. We saw in Ohio, it's happening in Pennsylvania right as we speak. For these factions of the Trump movement to lay claim to who is the true sort of ideological heir. And having that ultra MAGA label essentially legitimizes that movement, offers them a way to legitimize themselves. And calling Donald Trump King MAGA, I think we should try to avoid branding our opponents with names they would use on themselves.
Exactly.
That will immediately be used for fundraising. And it just shows you that the communications apparatus in the party is still stuck in D.C. looking at consultant reports. They're not aware of how these things are being used on social media or how political language is evolving. They're just not in that conversation.
Yeah, and yesterday I started the show off with a quote from Paul Begala, Who said that I don't know how the Democrats came from the party of the person on the factory floor to the party of the person in the factory lounge, but that's where he says we are. And I'm going, where you been? That's been that way for quite some time. And I would argue, Paul, you were part of what pushed us in that direction. But now that we identify, it's like any problem. Now that you understand what the problem is, change that. And this is where I wanted the president to lean heavily into. And he has. Look, I give him credit. He's leaned heavily into the union organizing, had Chris Smalls and a lot of the union organizers to the White House, has been very pro-labor. But I think you got to go even further than where we are. And you got to start pushing Democrats up and down the ticket to be doing the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, we've really lost that labor core in the party. There was a point, I think, around the Obama 2008, 2012, where the party really started chasing Silicon Valley money. And there was a lot of young liberal tech billionaires who wanted to support the party. And the party moved that direction and stopped talking as closely with labor and stopped collaborating as closely. And right now we're in the middle of a labor renaissance in this country. And it's driven almost entirely by young people, voters Democrats need. And there's not the level of support I had expected to see. I was glad to see Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren out on picket lines. I was glad to see Joe Biden mention it. But I mean, you're right. It is a back burner conversation right now.
No, but this goes back to Bill Clinton even. I mean, this goes back to, I voted for him for one reason. He was going to pass strike replacement, and that didn't happen. But, he was, part of what moved us away with the DLC and, being more business friendly, kind of, third way kind of stuff. And that whole DLC thing, the Democratic Leadership Council folks, they moved us into the Wall Street types and away from workers and brought us trade policies and all kinds of things that harmed workers. And look, Al Gore was no great friend of labor either. They were just less bad than the Republicans. And that's been the problem. They've been just less bad instead of the champions that working people need. So clearly, people went where someone was fighting for whatever interest they've got now. And working people then kind of took on some of these cultural issues going, hey, if I'm going to get screwed at work, let's fight for something else. And that's, I think, how we got where we are today.
It's certainly a reason we saw that labor just sheathed off the party in 2016 in a way that I don't think the pollsters predicted, because quite frankly, the modeling and the consensus polling data points among consultants in the Beltway discounts labor and to our detriment. And the best thing that we can do is really connect with this movement that's going on right now, especially with Starbucks. I think there are powerful union organizing forces at play in this country right now, and they are there to be allied with. And they will remember if we do not.
What I love about what's going on at Starbucks and also look at Amazon with Chris Smalls and the Amazon Labor Union is not so much that they're organizing and they're winning NLRB elections. It's that they're actually building worker power. They're building, really aggressive workers who are demanding. They're not going to take no for an answer. And the Amazon example at JFK 8 is a perfect example of this. These are people who won't be denied. These are worker organizers who are fighting and internalize that worker power. And I keep saying this is what we need to go back to, because once you feel power in the workplace, that kind of sentiment goes into every other aspect of your life, political, social, all of that. And that's where I think we need to get back to.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, we have the victories. What's missing are the visuals. This is a movement in dire need of some heroic and powerful visuals. I saw Starbucks had asked the White House to give them a meeting because the White House had met with union organizers. And I think that would be an incredible opportunity for Joe Biden to meet with Starbucks management and unions together in the treaty room hold a Theodore Roosevelt style negotiation together.
Absolutely. But here's the interesting part of this. And, going back to the Clintons, we find out and I remembered that Howard Schultz, the CEO, the old new CEO of Starbucks, was going to be Hillary Clinton's Secretary of Labor. If she were elected in 2016, That shows how far the Democratic Party has moved back to the side of working people. That, you know, and this is where I give Biden credit. And I hope he'll do just what you said. You know, convene a summit, bring Howard Schultz and the Starbucks United folks together, and, you know, have a Rose Garden and tea or whatever you got to do. Have a coffee and hammer it out.
Yeah, I think that's an incredible visual would be Joe Biden just saying, we're going to the treaty room. We're not coming out until we have a deal. And the visual itself would be stunning. It would be an incredible show of progressivism in action, yielding results. I don't know why we've been so cautious about embracing this.
Yeah, I'm with you. Last question I got for you. Jen Psaki's leaving. I guess today, the last day. Evidently, she has held more press conferences than the entire 4 years of the former guy and all of his press secretaries, of which he had four: Spicer, Huckabee, Sanders, Grisham, and that Kayleigh McEnany. Wasn't Scaramucci? Wasn't he one for about six? No, wait a minute. He was director of communications. I forgot that.
It was something, all right.
No, he was only there for a cup of tea. I mean, he wasn't there long. Like, what was it, like 10 minutes? He got his 15 minutes before they ushered him out. But you know, I think she'll be missed. I liked her. I liked her a lot.
Yeah, I liked her a lot. I mean, it's no surprise she did more work than all the Trump secretaries put together. That's what happens when you have someone who reads the training manual, who shows up to work and cares about the job. And I'm excited about Corinne Jean-Pierre as well. I mean, she's an incredibly talented communicator, a progressive communicator I have great respect for. I've seen her work up close. And I think she will be an excellent advocate for a White House that really needs a communication.
Are you surprised that the right's gone after her for comments trying to pin the racist label on her?
Not at all. Corinne Jean-Pierre is a Columbia-educated, gay, Haitian immigrant woman. This is everything that Republicans hate. She defies all of their ignorant stereotypes and excels so plainly that it enrages them. And this is sadly typical. It's disgraceful, but typical.
Yeah. Look, I know she's qualified. I know she's going to be great at her job, but there's part of me that goes, I got to think someone said this would be the perfect choice just to stick it to them a little bit. I mean, or am I just being a little cynical?
No, I think she was chosen entirely because she's excellent for the role. I think it certainly makes me happy that it makes Republicans upset.
Well, there is that. But just as a reminder, Stephanie Grisham held the title for 8 months of press secretary and did not hold one single on-the-record press briefing.
She'll be missed.
There you go. You will be. She's missed. All right. But Max, I appreciate the time. Again, congrats on the new gig. I hope you'll come back again and share some time with us since you've now hit the big time. Good on you, buddy.
Thank you.
Thanks so much, our good friend Max Burns. Make sure you check out his work at the Daily Beast. We'll get links out on social media how you can do that. Can I take a quick break? Right back with your thoughts. 1-866-416-RICK. 1-866-416-7425. If you're just joining us, make sure you grab the podcast. Never miss an episode. Subscribe so it's always there, ready for you when you wake up. You take on the go. Back after this. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1968. That was the day that workers across Paris joined students in a citywide general strike. College students had begun an occupation at the famed Sorbonne University earlier that May. These students were protesting what they saw as governmental repression in post-war France. A story by NPR, marking the 40th anniversary of the protests, described the situation in France, where women could not wear pants to work and married ones needed a husband's permission to open a bank account. Homosexuality was a crime. Factory workers could be fired at will.
the news on the single TV channel required governmental approval, and the overcrowded education system was authoritarian. The students protested French leader Charles de Gaulle and the police. The addition of workers to the protest greatly increased its scope and impact. Paris and much of the country ground to a halt. President de Gaulle was able to weather the protests and keep his political power. By the end of June, most workers had returned to their jobs, but the country would never be the same. The protests of that spring became known as the Social Revolution. It was a turning point in the nation's history, and institutions from workplaces to universities would undergo a liberalization due to the protests. One of the most lasting images from the strike was a series of posters, simple designs emblazoned with the slogans and demands of those involved. One such poster called people to strike, declaring, "Working now is working with a gun to your head." Another read simply, "Factories, universities, union."
Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, and follow us on the Twitters at Labor History in 2.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So I had one of these moments, during the break. My wife's telling me, Sarah from Chicago calls, listen on WCPT AM 820, going, I don't want to talk to somebody famous. And I'm going, I'm famous? Oh my goodness, someone thinks I'm famous. Oh, I'm not famous. I'm literally nobody. But hey. Thank you, Sarah. I appreciate it. But Sarah did relay some interesting stuff to my wife, who does my screening. And it's the kind of stories that we do need to tell. They're important stories of, kind of like I tell about my life. When someone gets a union job in my neighborhood where I grew up in the projects, their life got better. And in those places where workers don't have that protection, life doesn't. And the story that, Sarah was telling my wife was, there was a black union and a white union. And back, they were talking years and years ago. But, you saw black workers have better lives because of their unions. And as she pointed out, there was a worker who worked in the coal mines, didn't have protections of a union, ended up with black lung and ended up with nothing. Not surprising to me. But these are the stories that we have to tell. This is the history that we have to pass on from generation to generation to know where we've come from and where the right wing wants to take us back to. Because understand, when they talk about deregulation, they want to strip away protections that would save someone from black lung. When they talk about freedom of contract, they're talking about taking us back to the Lochner era where unions were bad, and bringing back yellow dog contracts where if you had the audacity to say you joined a union, you got fired immediately. These are stories we have to tell. So Sarah, I appreciate it. I wish you to spend some time telling me your story though. Let's quick go to the phones. Got Alice on line one. Alice, how are you today?
I'm good. I got two quick stories for you. First one, talking to the right-wing Trump supporter today, we got on the religion thing, and she was saying, going on and on about, Jefferson wrote it, and he was a big Christian. Well, I had to bust her bubble and tell her, no, I think you need to research this a bit more. He was an atheist. He even took everything, published his own Bible.
He wrote the Bible.
Yeah. Well, he took everything out of the, King James thing on the New Testament, all the other stuff, and put it together. And it actually, for years, and I think the last one was given out in the early 1900s, they would give them to the new Congress people when they come in. Okay, well, I busted her bubble on that, and then I also informed her about Project Veritas was nothing more than the right-wing National Enquirer version. So she wasn't real happy. And then the second thing was, I'm minding my own business, got everything pulled out of the living room, vacuumed behind, phone's ringing off the hook, about killed myself to get to the phone to find out it was one of our right-wing people that are running for political office in Pennsylvania that was having the anti-abortion, whatever wing of it, calling to save the unborn babies and donate to him. Yeah, well, they weren't real happy by the time I got off the phone with them.
I'm sure you donated something.
I gave them information, if nothing else. They hung up on me.
Yeah, I can see that happening.
Yeah. So, yeah. But, hey, when I hit my toe, you know, I'm not being nice to anybody. So you have a good evening.
Thank you, Alice. I appreciate it. I would have loved to have been on the, I would have loved to have heard that conversation. Can we record that? That would have been radio gold. But, you know, at the end of it, look, this is why I think what we do here is so important. Having these conversations, talking about how we move in a more positive direction and do things that are going to make lives better. I think that's important. And what we're not getting from our Republican friends, and look, you know, as we're seeing, they don't have a policy agenda. There's nothing there. There's lots of insanity. There's lots of circus acts. There's lots of grievance. There's lots of outrage candy, but there's no policy on what exactly are you going to do to make our lives better? What are you going to do to take on and fix inflation other than platitudes? You know, I have a lot of friends who go, oh, Joe Biden did this. Well, how did he do it? Well, he gave $1,400 to everyone. What? Well, Biden gave $1,400, but Trump gave $1,800. So what's your point? Well, he gave a bunch of money to the states. Yeah, he gave money to the states. Like DeSantis has got money from the federal government that he's using to give tax breaks to the people of Florida. Like DeWine's did in Ohio. Like Kristi Noem did in South Dakota. What's your point? But they don't get that. They don't get that. While all of these Republican politicians are bashing Biden, they took the money. They took all of it, didn't vote for it, attempted to block every bit of it, but boy, did they take it. Boy, did they line their pockets. And this is where, you know, again, understanding exactly what these people are about, why it's so vitally important to ask the question, what are you going to do? And if they don't have an answer, you don't vote for them. If their answer is, well, I'm not them, that ain't a good answer. Just throwing that out. Anyway, if you've missed any of today's program, make sure you grab the podcast, thericksmithshow.com, or wherever you get your podcasts. For stations picking up only the first hour, make sure you get that second hour at the podcast. For everybody else, we're going to take a quick break right back after this.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.